Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Today we're going to talk to the creative team who created the audiobook for Battlefield Earth. Jim, I'm probably going to mispronounce your name, guys, so I'm sorry. Meskman, Phil Proctor, and Fred Talascori.
I have no idea.
Tattishore, right?
Yes, that's about right. Yeah.
Yeah, row the boat to Tattishore.
Well, I tried. I'm sorry if I messed them up.
Don't be.
You meskimmed them up. You meskimmed it up. That's what you did.
Well, I'm sorry.
It's all right. We will forgive you. And that's the royal we. I don't know about the other two guys.
I yep. Concur. Yeah. It's all. I can't even pronounce my name. It's really fine.
Why don't we start with each of you telling a little bit about yourself, so the audience who's unaware of you and what you do, they'll get to know you a little better. Can we start with Jim? Why don't you tell a little bit about yourself?
Sure, unaccustomed as I am to public speaking. I'm an actor, voice artist, impressionist, and a director. And I've been working in Hollywood and in New York for about 30 years. I grew up out here, and I've been on lots of TV shows. I was on America's Got Talent in 2013 doing my impressions. People might have seen me there. You could have seen me on a lot of things in the last 30 years. And I'm here today with my friends talking about Battlefield Earth, the number one best-selling audiobook this summer by L. Ron Hubbard, which is a very exciting book that we're very thrilled to talk about. Phil?
Yeah,
Phil?
Which Jim actually directed. A monumental job. He had to work with, 67 actors?
Uh-huh, and all their egos.
Yeah, and all their egos. Leo was filled to overflowing with egos. And it has. He did not have to do it, but the audiobook has 150,000 sound effects. You can count them. You know, I did. Uh-huh. And
we're
if you listen
do
to it end to end, it'd take you 47 and a half hours?
That's right, 47 and a half hours in length.
Which is easy for us to do here in California because we spend so much time sitting in traffic in our cars listening to a CD, you know, for 47 and a half hours. That's just a normal commute. Who am us anyway? I'm everything that Jim is, except I'm not an impressionist the way Jim is. I've been a member of the group called the Fire Sign Theater, a four-man satirical comedy group for 50 years.
Yeah.
50 years, hey! And let me see, I have three Grammy nominations for Best Comedy Albums. A lot of people probably know me through for Fire Sign Theater, who are still alive and who can still remember things. But then I've done voices for all kinds of stuff. If you Google me at planetproctor.com or just go to Phil Proctor in Wikipedia, you'll get a sense of all the wonderful, crazy things that I've done. And you'll get a chance to see me or something like me during Black History Month in 2017 on a PBS three-part special about Francis Scott Key called After the Song. And I play a wonderful real historical character named John Randolph of Roanoke. So you have a chance to see my acting chops.
I'm out of town that month.
I'll tape it for you. But that's archaic.
Okay.
I'll send you a link. Okay. So anyway, people may know me as the Drunken French Monkey in the Dr. Doolittle movies. I am a social drinker. They may know me through as Howard in the Rugrats and various other Pixar and Disney movies and stuff like that.
How about you, Fred? Fred Tattishore,
Fred.
I believe, is Fred Tattishore.
Tattishore. I'm
can
really
help
more
you with that
just,
later, Fred.
I can't. I know. I need help with that. I'm just more of a fan, really. I'm a big fan of the Fire Sign Theater and Jim Meskimen. They just let me hang out with them. That's pretty much what I do. But I'm a voice actor, animator, and comedian, depending on who you ask. And I play Kerr in Battlefield Earth. And people know me from work on Family Guy. I play Hulk. That's been a big character of mine for a long time. Usually a bad guy in the DC world and a good guy in Marvel. I don't know why that is. A lot of stuff on Nickelodeon and Cartoon Network and Disney and a bunch of video games.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
God, you guys have a lot of experience. How did you all get into doing an audiobook?
I think I can answer that.
Yeah.
Phil and Fred and I participated in a massive project before Battlefield Earth where we dramatized all the early pulp novels of L. Ron Hubbard, the westerns, the mysteries, the science fiction, of course, and fantasy tales from the 30s and 40s. And that was a fun experience because we got to be, you know, we did it by putting five or six of us together in a nice recording studio and just reading these wonderful stories aloud in real time, more or less. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of fun. And then the same publishers came to me and said, "Would you know, the next one to do is Battlefield Earth." And it's this massive, massive project that we could not do in the same way. But I knew from working with Fred and working with Phil Proctor that I had to get these guys involved because they were so talented. They just bring they bring words to life. You know, a script just sits there; it's a silent thing. And a story, as good as it is, it needs someone to bring it to life and to bring character to it. And these two guys are the best I've ever met. So that's how we all got started working on it.
That's extremely kind of you because, you know,
There
are so many wonderful, talented people here in the Hollywood area that we've all worked with over the years. So to be, you know, to be allowed to participate in these amazing projects and to be challenged to do so many different kinds of voices and characters was a tremendous opportunity. And we feel, I think I can speak for Fred as well, feel blessed that we were brought in to work on these projects. So thank you for your kind words.
It's my pleasure, my friend.
I concur. And I know that there are 67 actors that would probably agree, too, on that.
Yes,
too.
It's true.
We had to come up with a different way of working because we couldn't get jam 67 people into a room for 9 months and do the recording. So we had to do it rather more like a movie. And I actually sat in the booth with each individual actor, and we recorded each part separately. Mostly I spent time with the narrator who had the bulk of the work to do, wonderful stage actor Josh Clark. And, and I spent weeks and weeks and weeks with Josh. And then we'd lay in these other voices to do the characters. But when it comes together with the sound effects, with the full production, with the, I mean, we had every, Phil said we had 150,000 sound effects. It's no exaggeration.
There's a few of them right there.
Sorry.
Yeah, Fred did most of them.
That's all it is. The cheaper version.
We had a whole team. When you hear it, it sounds exactly like a movie. A movie playing in your mind.
Exactly.
Cinematic.
The amazing. Wonderful, wonderful experience to listen to.
And you can get it, too.
It's immersive.
You can download it at BarnesandNoble.com or Audible.com or BattlefieldEarth.com. You can download it. You can hear it immediately. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
On Audible.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
With the scope of characters and how many there were, how was there an audition process, or were you guys just picking and choosing from people you knew? How did you pick the actors to do the voiceovers of all those characters?
Well, as a director, I worked with a casting person that we had on the staff, and as I said, in the case of Phil and Fred, I just had to find things for them to do. You know, I knew I wanted them involved, and I knew that, you know, Phil could do all sorts of accents, as could Fred, and play all different kinds of characters. So I think we utilized you guys in at least maybe four or five, maybe six different characters in the
book.
That's
right.
For sure.
Other people, we had to kind of vet them a little bit and give them a chance to audition. But we didn't. We'd already kind of come through all these pulp novels, and I had a pretty good big company of people that were interested in doing it and whose talents I had experienced. So there wasn't a whole lot of auditioning, as I recall.
No, that's right. There was a great advantage to the fact that we had all worked together in various capacities over, how many years did it take us to do the Pulp Fiction series? 3 years, 4 years?
I want to say 3 years, yeah.
3 years.
3 years for Pulp Fiction?
Yeah, and so
it started,
as a result, not only did we have a chance to interact with our fellow actors and see, you know, hear their chops, but Jim,
right,
as a director, was able to really categorize them in his mind, and it made the process a lot easier, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely did, yeah. And it's very satisfying, fun, and I love working with that. I found I really love working with other actors. You know, I used to have a kind of a competitive feeling about actors in general. That was my default feeling. Was like, oh, yeah, there's that guy. Yeah, he's talented.
Really?
I hate him.
That's totally different now. That's so funny.
I did. I covered it up well.
Well, you were a good actor too, right? You're a good actor as a director. You pretended
exactly.
You actually enjoy working with other
you.
Actors. That's amazing.
Right.
I was convinced.
Well,
he had us fooled, Phil. Yeah.
But then, of course, you
trained
us too, so that makes a big difference, right?
Right.
Yeah.
We're
yeah, it was really great.
We're, well, you guys are you all did your stuff separately. Was it difficult to play all these characters without playing off the other actor?
It's an interesting question that you ask, because a lot of people don't realize that in cartoon work and in the work that we do in interactive games, much of the time is spent doing solo work and reacting to, you know, to the voice director who is saying the lines that you're responding to. And there are different techniques that you learn. Very often, we will break down a script, or a script will be presented to us in such a way that we can repeat a line three different ways. You know, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? See?
Are you ready?
Yeah, and then somebody says, emphasize you. All right, are you ready? Good, we got it. On to the next. You know, I mean, the techniques of recording these things, even in the big Pixar movies and the Disney movies and everything, are often done in a solo situation as opposed to working off of somebody. Although we've all also had experiences, like in the Hanna-Barbera days, when I worked on the Smurfs, and I know Fred has worked on some of these shows as well, you'll have a whole room full of actors, and you'll go through the script and act it out, and then they'll go in and they'll do pickups. In other words,
like a radio play.
Yeah, they'll do it like a radio play. And that's a whole different experience, and it's great, great fun, especially because I was sitting in a room with Jonathan Winters and Alan Young and, you know, amazing, wonderful actors and comedians that I admired so much as a kid and who inspired me. But that's an entirely different situation. That's the way they did The Tick as well. The cartoon
series.
Oh,
right.
But more often than not, because of the availability of the actors, you're required to book them separately. All right? It's hard to get everybody together in this day and age. It wasn't so hard maybe 30, 40 years ago. I don't know why it was easier, but
I think
it seemed to be easier
done.
To get everybody together in one room. And now I think it's a lot more difficult. Our lives have become, I don't know, busy, fragmented, electrocuted, I don't know, you know, cyberspaced, something. But,
sure.
But that seems
what
to be
was
the nature
like
of it.
Working, what was it like working with the great Jonathan Winters? He was amazing.
Well, he's just he was just a great zany, you know, love-filled guy who occasionally had to go into an insane asylum to sort out all of his characters, apparently. I mean, it's true. Everybody knows that he would occasionally, what would you call it, he put himself away for a while so that he could just kind of, like, relax his mind. But in real life and in between takes and everything, he was a joyful, wonderful, funny, zany man, and generous actor, generous man.
Yeah, I admire him a lot.
Yes, we all do.
Yeah, we love him.
Okay.
I met him once, and he went out. Oh, sorry, guys. I met him one time, and he had just written Winter's Tales, and I said, I really love your book, and he said, yeah, you know, sometimes when you have one part of your career dries up, you got to go somewhere else, and then he went on about 20 minutes talking about working at a gas station.
Oh,
you know,
kidding.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, when the old people get up to the pump, I have to go do it. I don't like it, you know, because then I have to go out of my little kiosk. You know, and he just and it's just that moment of looking at you, him just going, oh, wow, you really are that guy. Okay.
Jonathan Winters worked at a gas station?
No, he just suddenly became
joke.
That person.
Oh,
is that what you're saying, Chris?
It was a joke. It was one of the
characters. I thought he was going to say to me.
He probably
worked
in a gas station about 1929.
Yeah, he might
right.
have. He might have.
He might have.
But he had. Because
he kind
true.
Of explained
all,
it.
Just like, Jim, you have all these voices at your beck and call, all of these
yes,
personalities
man.
in your mind that you can bring forth at any moment. He also carried all these characters around, you know, as opposed
right.
to
the whole,
a dear,
the whole challenge of that, as you know, Phil, the whole challenge is to keep them straight and to put them in the proper
yeah.
compartment.
I know. What do you talk? I mean, what kind of people are you at home? Is your wife and your daughter?
Yeah.
Are you yourself? Is there such a thing as yourself?
There's nothing there.
Nothing there, is there? No, there's nothing
you're
there.
You're shattered fragments of what was.
Well, this is what made Battlefield Earth such a joy to do, because these guys, they can, at the drop of a hat, they can be any character you want. And I just hope people really enjoy it. It's the number one best-selling audiobook right now, and people love it. And it's free on audible.com when you sign up for an Audible subscription. I don't know if people know that.
Oh, that's great.
Absolutely free.
Yeah.
And so check it out. Pretty fun. We had a great time.
Yeah, and
it's
a great
a
adventure, too. It'll absolutely sweep you away. And the other
it's
thing
very
is...
very cinematic.
It's very prescient. All of the things that L. Ron Hubbard wrote in that story are remarkably present today, you know, and almost frighteningly so, I would say.
Exactly.
The themes that he touched
yeah.
upon, you know, in politics and society and the universe, the search for
money.
The universe, meaning in the universe, are all very, very pertinent today.
It's very
yeah.
interesting. When you were doing, did you read the book first before you started to do it, or did you read it after, or did you discover it as you were doing it? How did it come about for each of you?
Well, for myself, I'd read it when I was a kid, because I was a huge science fiction fan for all of my early years, and so I was acquainted with the book, even though I certainly couldn't remember all of the specific characters or details. That I was specific. Sorry, that's an alien. I had to do some alien talk, and that's it just
Joe,
came out.
No, I don't want,
it's
Cyclo. I don't want to take air out of your balloon, but the book was written in 1982.
82.
Yes.
Well, he was a kid.
Well, I was a young.
You were young.
I was young in mind.
No, he's still
I was
a
young
kid.
In,
come
I still
on,
am
him.
Actually. But no, I was actually referring
to
the fact
You'll
that I was a science fiction fanatic from an early age.
Yeah.
And devoured as much of it as I could.
And he and Hubbard had been writing for 50 years at that point, right? I mean, he'd
right.
been
right.
writing
yeah.
forever.
Yeah,
yeah,
Battlefield Earth is his 50-year celebration as a professional writer. He wrote it just for himself and for his own enjoyment. And it's won a lot of prizes all over the world. I had read it many times in the 80s. I read it from the – it was published in 1982. I think I read it in 83. I'd read it probably five or six times. So I was very acquainted with it. But still, it's a massive tome. It's like almost 1,000 pages long. If it was a script, I don't know.
3,000
long script
words.
Or something. Yeah, it's huge. But it's so well crafted, and everything is there for a reason. It's not overwritten. It's just a massive story. It actually takes place over 16 universes, so it's a saga, and
mm-hmm.
it takes place in the future, the year 3000. As Phil said, it's very prescient, and mm-hmm. and I think it's a great story. It's an engaging story, and it's one that audiences have been appreciating all over the world for you know since its publication.
And you read it six or seven times because of your short-term memory loss, isn't that right?
Exactly.
Which
did
one
I
is
read
this Battlefield
book?
Earth?
Yeah,
wait. Battlefield Earth, right? Yeah.
Yes, Battlefield
Earth.
I had
it in my hand, and I wanted, why is this in my hand?
Why is this book in my hand? Am I exercising? It's a heavy book.
Yeah, I had discovered it as we were working on it. You know, that was my I had been familiar with his writing, but his fiction writing. But then I discovered it really as we were doing it, and it was a fun process too because it was really Jim and then you know Phil or I were playing off each other, and he would just play these different parts, and we would play off him, and he was such a great actor to play off of. You know, he knew all
Thank
the
you.
Parts that well. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to get it all done for such a big book?
I think
the production time was 9 months, like the birth, like the gestation of a human being. It was It happened to be 9 months.
9 months of work, right? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and that's everything with the production, because it was a whole assembly line of people that were adding music and sound effects and cleaning up the audio and mixing it, making it sound like it had different rooms and different depths and outdoors and indoors and all that.
You guys are all so experienced. Is voiceover artist your favorite, or do you prefer live on stage, or do you prefer film or TV? What is your preference?
What do you say, Fred?
For me, and this is going to sound really dopey, but I'm going to say it. They're all kind of scratch the same itch for me in many ways, because it's just performing, it's acting. You know, each thing, the live thing is so wonderful because of the audience connection. Voice acting, I really, it's like being a session musician. I can really shape what I want to do and really, you know, fine-tune it. But I feel like I'm kind of doing a lot of the same, you know, like if you're doing something on camera, there's different things you have to be aware of, like, you know, if you're doing, you know, having a microphone or following your light or whatever. But I for me, they scratch that same passion for me.
Yeah, I think that's probably true for me too. Although I you know, studied acting at Yale and was on Broadway and in the Sound of Music, started doing, you know, musicals on Broadway and off Broadway. and my training was primarily in theater, but I was always attracted to people like Bob and Ray on the radio.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Ernie Kovacs, of course, on television because he was such a great surrealist. But I was attracted to the idea of being able to use my voice to create comic ideas and intentions. And I used to play with a tape recorder and fiddle around when I was a kid with different voices. So when I became allied with the Firesign Theater, in the mid-60s, which was all voice work, you know, making records, I found that I could suddenly utilize my kind of desire to do many, many, many voices. And naturally, it branched out from there into commercial work and then cartoon work and more sophisticated film work. And I found it challenging because I had to kind of learn how to sublimate what I had learned as an actor into a mental place, into a vocal place, and I was using the same tools but applying them differently, and that's where I much with Fred.
Yeah, that's true. We all start in theater, I think, a lot of us. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah, that was usually our training in schools is always on the stage, and which is wonderful because if you feel comfortable on the stage, then you can pursue all the different aspects of the dramatic world, you know, because you feel confident. It's really just a question of confidence, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And even though we were all, it sounds like we were all kids who fooled around with tape recorders and like making radio shows and stuff with our voices, and that's a particular hankering that I noticed is very typical for voice actors. But if you're a stage performer, and I noticed from directing all these books that the stage actors were the ones that were most facile at really good audio performances because they're already used to and geared towards creating a 360-degree performance that which includes the voice and is not just you know, the physicality.
That's right. It's interesting also, Josh Clark, who does the narration, a beautiful, beautiful job.
So well done.
Yeah, he and I are in a classical theater company called the Antaeus Company in North Hollywood here in the Los Angeles area. And I've worked with him in many, many, many productions. And it's true that we are challenged when you do classical work. You're challenged in so many ways to utilize your voice for, you know, effects and character effects, that it is a great advantage.
I would think that theater would be the strongest thing, because theater is like you're live, you're doing it. It's, even if it's a set performance, you have to know what you're doing, and because there's so much training in it. That makes sense. So you would say that anybody who wants to be a voice artist should get a nice, solid background in theater?
I would say
Yeah, most definitely.
And you know what? The thing about theater is, and you said it's a set performance. Well, yes and no. A performance in the theater has to be alive every night. It has to be as though it's the first time, and you learn to do that as well. You learn to interact with your fellow actors in such a way that you maybe surprise them, surprise you, and you're working with a live audience, which has a definite effect on your performance. You know, whether they're they're really into what you're doing, if it's a comedy, whether they're laughing uproariously or whether they're sitting on their hands or they're enjoying it. You know, you sometimes get an audience that, oh, we just loved your performance. You go, oh, that's good. Why didn't you tell me while you were sitting in the audience? You know, I'm not articulating it well.
Yeah.
But we all know that experience of an audience coming back to you and saying, my God, that was just wonderful. But they were a quiet audience as opposed to one that – it's raucous, you know.
Yeah, some people don't know if they're supposed to laugh or not, too.
Yeah, that's true. You have to kind of sometimes allow them to laugh. Yes, you may enjoy this. You may participate. You know.
You guys, believe it or not, we're at the end of the show.
No! Impossible!
Half hour goes really fast. I want to thank you all for being on the show. Thank you, guys.
Oh.
I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sherry.
To mention one thing. If you want to see what I'm up to now, you can Google Boomers on a Bench on Facebook or YouTube. Boomers on a Bench, and you'll see some silliness.
By all means, watch Philly's Brilliant. And also go to www.battlefieldearth.com and check out samples. Listen to the audiobook a little bit. You can listen to samples there. You can order it, and you'll enjoy it a lot.
Do you guys have any live events? We have like about 2 minutes. Do you have any live events or any kind of events that you want people to come to? Theater signings, book signings, whatever, anything that you'd like people to find out about?
How about you, Joe? You got ready to do something again?
I don't have anything I can tell anybody about.
No, I don't think any of it. Well, how about you, Fred?
I got a Salt Lake City Comic Con coming up.
Yeah,
okay, there you go.
Labor Day weekend.
So I'll see you all in Salt Lake City.
No. Okay. All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you. Take care.
Thanks so much, Sherry. Thanks, boys.
Bye.
Yeah,
thank
so much
you.
Fun. Thanks,
and
guys.
Thank you. And
you,
thank
Sherry.
You for chatting with Sherry.
You're welcome.
Oh, it's wonderful. Hello?
Hello?
Hey, you there?